Mrs. Constance Radcliffe is an enthusiastic and knowledgeable student of things Manx, history, culture, language. She, moreover, has a great gift for reciting Manx poems in dialect. In this Manx Heritage Year, 1986, I have been privileged to record on this cassette a comprehensive selection of her recitations so as to preserve them for the years to come. She will herself introduce each poem.
In this little personal selection of short poems arranged in two parts, I hope to remind listeners of the work of five writers of Manx dialect verse, all but one of them associated with Ramsay. The scenes and stories are based on real events and persons, some comic, some serious, all nostalgic. The first group begins with a poem by Cushag, the pseudonym of Miss Josephine Kermode, sister of Mr. P.M.C. Kermode, first curator of the Manx Museum. Both were members of the large and talented family of the Reverend William Kermode, who was chaplain of Ramsay for nearly 30 years up to 1871, and afterwards vicar of Macleod and rector of Balaff. In the first verse, there's a reference to the Owl Archdeacon speaking Manx in the pulpit, and this is not, as people of my generation might think, Archdeacon Cooley, but it is a reference to Archdeacon Moore, who died in 1886. He was the uncle of Mr. A.W. Moore, the historian and Speaker of the House of Keys, and he was himself a great-nephew of the Reverend Philip Moore, the supervisor of the translation of the Bible into Manx. Them owl times. Them was the times, the fine owl times, when the Manx was going a-spakin' in the pulpit and all, it was going for all at the like of the Owl Archdeacon. Them was the times, the owl-fashioned times, when the flax would be going a-spinning, and the busy the queels were whistling round as quick as the talk of the women. Them was the times, the prosperous times, when no one was thinking of savings, but heaving the puddens over the quay to show there was lashings and lavings. Them was the times, the fine owl times, when the weaver was bringing the newses and clogging the bagging out of the wife while giving the master his views. Them was the times, the courting times, when the boys to the doer were stealing and the busy the dogs were wagging their tails to show there was no ill feeling. Them was the times, the fine owl times, when the childer were going a-rearing on porridge and jauch and bonnigs and broth and supping on pridders and herring. Next is a very short piece by the Reverend T.E. Brown, who lived in Ramsay in his retirement on Windsor Mount above the Moorick Park. In the 1930s, my father, Alec Kerfey, used to recite extracts from some of Mr. Brown's longer narrative poems, and also parts of the group called In the Coach. The little poem I've chosen from the In the Coach group makes it clear that the coach that Mr. Brown wrote about was the Ramsay coach, operated by Jem Crow, and this was running from the 1860s onwards from the yard in Tower Street, which was later Crellin's yard, where the Crellin family operated coaches, and now it's Mr. George Young's yard. Sometimes the passengers on the coach got more company than they bargained for. Noah's Ark, number 6 of In the Coach. On the road. Good gracious, what in the world is this?
A low cough, ma'am.
Why, you don't mean to say, I'll just take it by the scruff, ma'am. We'll leave it at the door. It's belonging to Mr. Moore. And to abominable brute was sucking at my boot, Mr. Crow. Mr. Crow, I'd have you to know. Just a little cough, ma'am. Just a little cough. Arrival at Ramsey. Mercy on us, what next? A little donkey, ma'am. A little what? Good heavens. Oh, you needn't be funky, ma'am. I'll get him out as quiet. Good people, bring a light. But a solitary female in the dark, with half the beasts in Noah's Ark, Mr. Crow. Mr. Crow, I'd have you to know. Just a little donkey, ma'am. Just a little donkey. Different places have been named as being the last haunt of fairies in the island. Miss Kermode favoured the wild and mountainous country above the top of Glen Helen, stretching from Little London and through Mullion Renass and up onto Beery Mountain. So this is her poem, The Passing of the Fairies. And was there a drop between us? That's what they're saying still. And never a drop was there at all, but a crowd of wands in the road for all, and striving up the hill. The dawn was barely streaking and a sup of rain doing in, but lifting as the day grew on, like drying up when the night was gone, with a scutch a rising wind. And here was these wands coming and creeping and up the side, with a certain murmuring, wailing sound that seemed to be rising all around like the sound of the weary tide. There was owl and young and childer, all bended under loads, with beds and crocks and spuds and grips and spinning wheels and tallow dips, all filing up the roads. From Airy Beg and Airy Mower, over the broken bridge, over the perk at Airy Glass, by Ballyhimmon and up Renass, and all along the ridge. And toiling up Beery Mountain with that wailing, sighing sound, as if their hearts were going a-breaking, before their last leave they were taken, wherever they were bound. And Beery was rowling his cloak and raging it down his side, and coaxing them up and lapping them round, till the wailing was dying gradual down, like the calm of the ebbing tide. I'm fortunate to have had a close association with Miss Kathleen Farragher. After she retired from her business in London in the 1950s and 60s, she often gave performances of her own works, sometimes enlisting the help of friends, of whom I was one, in presenting amusing duologues. Like Miss Kermode, Miss Farragher was born and brought up in Ramsey. And this is her little poem set in Ramsey, Well, Well. Have you seen Ginny Ann, Mrs. Corkle? Oh, that one. She's never around, out gathering the news, as I'll bet you, like a red Injun with his ear to the ground. Aye, there's nothing much passes herself there, for all she's never been off the sod. She knows all that goes on, I can tell you. Births, deaths, or today's price of cod. How Johnny and herself come to get married is more than a wise man could tell. The poor fella can't get a word edgeways. She's fair talked the boy into a spell. Aye, her tongue goes from morning till night time. It's a wonder it's not wore to the roots. Wear herself out, you say, cooking and cleaning. All that one wears out is her boots. I haven't got patience, Mrs. Corkle, nor the time, nother, to be standing around gossiping to this one and that one, for there's too much at home to be done. He she is coming now, Mrs. Cockle, all dressed up. How are you doing, Jenny Ann? Did you get a little sight of the map, girl? Was there anything new in the town? Is the shops all stocked up for the summer? Has any of the visitors come? Whose fine yacht was that going in the harbour? Lord help us, are you struck deaf and dumb? Wasn't there nobody married nor buried? Things is quiet for all. To think I've wasted me morning here waiting and you've no newses. No, nothing at all. We still have an electric railway station in Ramsey, although it's not so busy now as it was in the early 1900s, especially not in the evenings. At that time, Miss Kermode was visiting an old lady in Tower Road, one of the little houses that backs onto the tram station. Tower Road is still called the Pump Road by many people because that's where the Ramsey people used to go for water. This is the tram. The golden sunshine filled the room to every corner stealing. It glanced on Charlotte's silver hair and flashed along the ceiling. It touched the dingy walls with gold and painted all the china. The rosy basins on the shelf grew rosier and finer. The window high above the road looked over field and meadow to where the sun, fast rolling down, left Skacker Fell in shadow. And Charlotte placidly enjoyed, but gazed without emotion. Something was lacking I could see, but what I had no notion. "The wind there on the stairs," she said, and now she showed elation. "That's where the tram is, and the lights, and all the electric station, and all the folks as plain as coming in or going. That's what I like," she said, "the tram, and all the lights a-glowing." Mr. John Cleeter, who wrote under the pen name of Juden Noah New John, a Ramsey businessman, was another author who performed his own works to appreciative audiences. This was in the years before the war. Owl Bobby Bob is probably the best known of his Manx yarns. I'm not giving away the punchline if I explain that the word jowl comes into this and the jowl is the devil. Owl Bobby Bob. "Have you heard tell of Owl Bobby Bob and his woman Margaret Ann? She used to call him an awkward big slob if the butter had slipped out of his hand. And bless me soul, the fuss she'd make when he'd slept with his thumb on the soda cake. 'Bobby Bob, thou slob,' she'd bawl. 'Wherever wast thou brought up at all?' But Bobby would seldom answer her back, but ate away till his lips would smack. 'Don't noise like the mucken when thou ate, and put thy skithen down on thy plate.' And Bobby would say, that quiet and slow, 'I'm putting it down where it's meant to go.' Now, Bobby wasn't a bad soul at all, but mighty fond of a drop for all. But they're saying her constant nagging and frown sent Bobby to town his troubles to drown. And then herself would be on his track to give him cur there when he'd get back. But that's where Margaret Vaugh was stuck, like water on the wing of a duck. At last she thought, 'I'll cure him though. I'll give me Bowl Bobby Bob what for.' So the next time Bobby went to town, herself with a friggin' prowl around and worked herself all into a fidge, and off she goes to the Tholach Bridge and waited there for Bobby to come, saying, "I'll cure the owl rascal of rum." But Margaret hadn't to wait that long, for yonder was Bobby, coming strong, for the narrow bridge tacking his way, just like a ship in a heavy sea. "I'll frighten him out of his skin," she said, then flung a sheet right over her head, and rushed to meet him with a scream before he was halfway over the stream. "I've come to claim thee, Bobby Cowl. Come thou with me, for I'm the jowl." "Oh, deep though," says Bobby, and blinks and leers. "Oh, give us the hand, Bo. Frighten? No fears. I've lived with thy sister for 40 years. As you saw, that one was set in Balaf, and this other short poem of Mr. Cleeter's is set in Andrus, which was the parish of his ancestors. The Big Began. "I mind the time when I was a lumper a-rearing down at the lane, and once were seeing fanodries and odd times a cussed began. They were saying a big fellow was taken to crossing the road at night up at the four road yander, an hour before daylight. Bull of fiend, the fraken we were, though, to pass yonder place after dark. Quas yonder thing in the hedge, boys? Quas making old Billy's dog bark?" It happened one dark, stormy night, though, the thunder was rumbling and roaring, and the lightning flash seemed to split the clouds the way the rain come down pouring. And I heard Owl Dare shout, "Come, Bo, thou better get in all the craters, and don't forget the Owl Mare and the foal in the field out by Owl Danny Clater's." I was coming home on the Owl Mare's back with the little foal trotting behind us, through the scutching rain and the thunder clap and lightning fit to blind us. We just got up to the cross four ways. The owl mare, poor fiend, stopped dead. The began, for sure, was crossing the road, not more nor two jumps ahead. I tried to shout, but I couldn't speak. Oh, I thought I'd met me doom. I began to sweat and shiver and shake, and me hair stood up like a broom. At last a shout came out of me, though, and sudden me joints all seemed to thaw. "It's a dirty night, Bo," said the began, "getting over the hedge into Ballawhaine. And that's the rascal of a began that frightened all the wans down at the lane. Couldn't a gale up at Ballacale, then a short cut home through Ballawhaine. The rascal." This is another of Cushag's evocative little poems called Bonds. Should explain that bonds are sticks for firing, especially bits of old gorse bushes. Bonds. "It'll be in the teens of years I'm living here alone, and the house is bare at me too, like a nest when the birds is flown. But the days is lonely afar past what it is in the night, for then I'm stirring the bonds till the house is full of light. And then I'm seeing the lumpers all playing about on the floor, with Pussy Bark stretching her back and Dare coming in on the door. And a long little family are us, Henry, John and Lil, and one that was took at the Angels, and Miriam Maud and Bill. Henry went for a sailor and the ship went down in the night, but I'm seeing him reading his book when the bonds is burning bright. And I'm feeling a foot for the cradle and the tear dropping down from the eye for the one that was took at the Angels when I hadn't no time to cry. Johnny was studying on common and terrible fond of the land, and helping Day with the basis and giving us all a hand. Billy and him went foreign. I heard they were doing well, but the name of the place they went to is beating all to tell. The girls is married on farmers and bringing a boy or a child for to see the owl granny and all and be reared at me here for a while. But I'm all as well by myself, for then, in the midst of the night, I can stir up the bones on the cholloch till the house is full of light. And I sit with a foot on the cradle till the blaze is dying down, and the childer goin' a-mixin' with the shadows creepin' in round. I'm watchin' one and another, and always her that was took, and Dare comin' in on the doer, and Henry readin' his book. I end my first group with another short poem by the Reverend T.E. Brown. It is not in Manx dialect, but I think it expresses a feeling that many Manx people have of valuing very much the separateness and difference of the island. Mr. Brown and his family are sitting on the slopes of Skiddaw in the Lake District and looking on a clear day across in this direction. It's the very end of his series of folksal yarns, which take up most of the book of his collected poems, and its name is Envoy, or Envoi, however one pronounces it, or in English, Go Back. But now, from the brow of old Skiddaw, high perched on the last of the cairns, myself and my bairns we searched for our sweetest of sweet little Hesperids, and our lids were stung by the sort sharp slung from the wall of a squall that wrought and blurred and slurred the air out there, so that naught of our isle the while could we see but a film of the faintest ivory. Just halfway down the slope we sit, when suddenly the sky is lit. Look, look, as through a sliding panel of pearl, our Mona, has she crossed the channel for us, that there she lies almost a portion of the Cumbrian coast? Dark purple peaks against the sun, a gorgeous thing to look upon. Nay, darling of my soul, I fear to see your beauty come so near. I would not have it. This is not your rest. Go back. Go back into your golden west. My second group describes some of the events in a Manx year, beginning, of course, with New Year's Day or New Year's Eve, waiting for the first foot, or as we usually say, the Qualtach. And this is by Miss Kathleen Farragher. You're quite sure Alfie's coming now, Johnny, to be the first foot to step through that door? He promised faithful, you say? Well, that's settled. Mind out, you'll have them bottles on the floor. Ah, he's a fine-looking dark fellow as Alfie, so as good luck he'll be bringing instead of Jeel. My, my, last year bet all. Slip the latch, boy, for he'll be here any minute now from Peel. That clock's a bit soon. 'Tisn't 12 yet, so keep your hands off that tray. Ah, howl your noise. There's the town clock now, and the harbour boat's blowing. Guy, there'll be grand singing at the girls and the boys. That you, Alfie? Must be the wind round the hall doer. I'll have a skeet. Throw a few more bombs on that fire. Oh, my laws, I've been took. It's the girls. John, they've gripped me. They're clawing me. Who's a liar? Fetch a light, man, and grip that big thorn stick. Hurry, I'll be tore to ribbons. Too late, they're gone. No, don't stew them, you'll be butched. What's so funny? Is Lizzie Ann, you say, running home across the lawn? She's been in after her owl sleech of a tomcat. And her a redhead. The Tom's ginger, too. Oh, dear, dear. That's double bad luck. Quick, let's sweep up the crossroads, or we'll be all for the killing again this new year. In the early 1900s, the Kermode family were living in Clibane, which they had inherited from their ancestors, the Callows. At that time, Clibane was a large farm, it's mostly now built up, and it included Ballacowl, which had formerly been a separate farm next door. Elfin Glen was formerly known as Ballacowl Glen, and the farmhouse of Ballacowl was in the Big Dip just below Ramsey Hairpin. And this is an encounter that Cushig had with an old man at the old house of Ballacowl, where I was rarento. The little stream of Ballacowl, it tumbles down the glen and hides beneath the lady fern to sparkle out again, then plunges underneath the road to seek a devious way where, lost in quarry refuse now, its early cradle lay. A roomy cradle once it was, o'erarched with spreading trees, a tangled paradise of flowers scarce touched by passing breeze. And here, among the primrose tufts, it wound its cheerful way, when, long ago, we wove our wreaths to welcome in the May. On May Day Eve I wandered there, and by the old plum tree I found a bent and aged man who gazed along the lea. His dress was of the lochan brown, his hair was white as snow, and quietly he rested there and watched the streamlet flow. "Good evening, friend," I gently said. "Good evening," said he. I said, "What do you here so late beneath our old plum tree?" "Good evening," he said again. His voice was soft and low. "I come to put a sight down here where I was rare and tall." He laid a bleached and withered hand upon the cold grey wall that once was gable of the house of Ballacowl, though little now remains to show where once it stood so fair, and but the plum tree lives to mark the garden that was there. "I mind the day we rode to church. The hay was nearly tedden. The apple trees were dressed in pink as we come through Clachbedden. We rode along the cuckoo field. The skies were blue and fair, and through the Croshig's miry lane to Kirk Christ of Lazare. I mind the owl ancient master well that lived at the Clachbedden. He lent the horse and pillion fine to take us to our wedding. I mind the dogs and childer too that scampered to and fro, and pussycats was out no tails where I was rarin' to." The sunset faded into grey. I heard the little stream. It seemed to mingle with his voice like music in a dream. No longer could I see his face, but still he murmured low, "I come to put a sight once more where I was rare and tall."
Please turn over to the next side of this tape for the rest of Mrs. Radcliffe's recording. Thank you.